All right, Goldfish on cliffcentral.com. Just a little break for us to get the studio organized for my VVIP guest this morning. I was just telling him how hard it was to get him in here in the first place. You don't believe me, huh?
I don't believe you at all.
That's true. I think you were in the mire of like media arguments and fights with people, and it just didn't work out. But Onko Potse, JJ Tabane is here, broadcast journalist. It's nice to see you, my friend.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, listen, it's been on the agenda for a very long time, but let's get straight into it. You're a busy man. You've got a lot going on. What are you most busy with at the moment? Because you're the former anchor of Power Perspective and Power 987, CEO of Squealy Media Group.
Yes,
yes,
that's my full-time job. That's actually.
What are you guys up to?
We do a couple of things. Firstly, we deal with what we call community radio productions.
Okay.
So we do syndicated radio
across community stations.
Yes, for clients, for NGOs, for international organizations, and local ones, where we package programming and then we syndicate it to different community radio stations. This is eventually going to be a standalone online radio station that will launch soon.
Excellent.
We do that also for television, but that is not yet out there, but the idea will be the same. So, for example, we've got 5 community TV stations.
Yes, Soweto TV.
Yes, so we'll do syndicated programming across those in the future.
Yes,
and
yes,
we're
yes.
still working on stuff like that. So that's the first area of work. Then the second area of work is PR. This is where most of our revenue comes from. So we do a lot of reputation management and crisis communications in particular.
And my God, do we have problems. In this country.
And you'll be shocked that some of the people approach us. But obviously, we don't make
corporate
a habit of saying who is our clients, particularly individuals.
Yes, as well.
But corporates also do someone else to say, hey, come and help us. And I prefer to get business that way. I mean, the whole idea of tendering on is exhausting.
Oh, my God.
To go there when people have already made up their minds who they want. And then they actually, when your proposal is good, you are actually disturbing them. So I prefer, you call,
but then it helps to have a reputation yourself, you have.
No, absolutely, yeah. because then I don't have to go and do business development. My business development is to answer my phone. Well, your producer may have a different view because, he tried to call me for 24 hours and he didn't get back to him. So that's to be the key thing. And then, most importantly, and this is how we started this organization. It's called spiritual communications. So we try to get people who have something to say when it relates to the gospel and help them to package it in such a way that it's not frightening to people they're trying to communicate with. So, so we have a couple of high bishops and priests around the world who are clients.
Jesus, please tell me you don't represent that
Bushiri.
Bushiri. No, Shepherd Bushiri.
No, we don't represent criminals and charlatans.
Boy, did you see what happened with him this week?
He went to a commission and said, nobody pays me to... He's lying through his teeth, the guy, eh? People pay up to 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 rands just to queue to see him, let alone queue to see him.
You know,
sometimes they don't even get to see him. They go back to they take their last money they've got and pay the guy who buys his daughter a Maserati. It's rubbish.
Isn't there something absolutely horrific? I mean, if you rip people off, if you're like a white-collar criminal and you get...
Yeah.
You get someone to sign some insurance thing that they don't understand, and the next thing there's a debit order coming off of 2 grand a month. But if you're earning, 20, 30, 40, 50 grand a month, then you probably deserve it because you should have looked at the fine print. But if you take advantage of people who are on a minimum wage or perhaps even less, they don't even have a job.
And they take that last money and give it to you.
And you've promised them nothing because all you can give them is hope. And then they fall for that, which is partly their fault, but it's also a kind of abuse.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then you take that money and you buy your daughter a Maserati. To me, that is unconscionable.
And you rub their poverty in their faces.
Yeah.
And then you laugh behind their back and say, hey, these guys are so gullible, They must just go and work.
But a lot of these preachers are like that. And that's why I don't like them. I find a lot of them are... They're self-conscious frauds.
Yeah.
So they know they don't even believe
that
shit.
But you don't know half of it. So we start this organization and say, we're going to help these priests to actually, impact on society, raise their profile so that this gospel message can be believable. I tell you, to even get our first client was a nightmare because some of the guys we met, we then had to reject. There's one who said
because
to us...
Because they were so immoral.
Immoral is an understatement. No, I'm not joking with you. And I've spoken a lot about this, but one of them says to us, guys, I actually want to be God. when you are finished with me, I want to be like a Modise. You know, Modise now, the guy who they are fighting over his millions now.
ZCC, right?
Do you believe that people like that?
Yes, I have met some of these people. And remember, this is a big thing in America. They've got those evangelical preachers who have TV channels. They have radio stations.
Now, those are the ones who must fear.
They have jets. Those ones. And a lot of them actually bankrolled a lot of our guys in the beginning to help them get started.
So now we find that our mission now is going to have to be to expose those charlatans. I mean, I know sitting here, priests or some of these bishops and so on, who are the worst culprits when it comes to women abuse. Mm. I mean, the Omotoso thing is simply a symbol.
Yes, exactly. That was the one in the Eastern
Cape. And the guy's so arrogant. He goes there and then he says, if you don't give me bail, I'm going to kill myself. And I said on my radio show, let him kill himself.
Yes, exactly. And then you're the bad guy, right? Because I bet you people came at you. I bet you they said, oh, how could you say that?
Yeah, I told him to go out to hell.
Yeah. Well, he will go to hell if there's a hell to go to. I'm curious, though, because a lot of these guys are also very involved with politicians.
Yes.
Because they protect each other, you see.
Yeah,
the politicians.
I mean, why is Bushiri not in prison?
Well, exactly. I mean, these guys should be. They're in cahoots, because what happens is the politicians go to the churches and they say to everybody, I'm a good guy, vote for me.
Absolutely.
It gives them a captive audience and they know gullible people are going to be there. And then in return, when the politicians get voted in, they give the churches a free pass. They already get through tax-free.
Absolutely.
We know that, which is just revolting. I think
it's crazy because these guys are businesses. You need to pay tax like all of us.
If you and I have to pay tax, then so should a church.
Absolutely.
And particularly a lying, crooked pastor, a preacher.
Yeah.
But anyway, we digress.
But so have you given Bushiri a roasting here? I mean, I hope so.
I don't think he'd come here, first of all. I don't think he'd talk to anyone. I don't think he doesn't feel
he went to the SABC and then he accused them of not having given him enough to say. I mean, after he's been there for 15 minutes on Morning Live, what else does he need?
He's a self-conscious fraud. He's a liar. He's a crook.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of crooks, though. So when it comes to the business of reputation management, you've got plenty of material there. There's lots to work with.
Absolutely.
All right, let's just talk a little bit about, the idea that you had this radio show.
Yeah.
Hugely successful radio show.
Absolutely.
It kind of helped that channel to launch.
Yeah.
Without your show, I don't know that many people would have been listening to Power. Let's be frank. I'll say it. They fired you.
Yes, but I always said to people, being fired is part of life. And I fired so many people in my own life. I thought maybe I should experience it myself.
This happened to me on a number of occasions, not in commercial radio, but when I was at campus radio. I mean, obviously we weren't being paid, so it didn't really matter. But radio management are really not very intelligent people. They don't seem to understand why people listen, even though they pretend to. Because people listened to you because you had things to say and you were interesting and you had a lot of contacts and you had useful insight and analysis. And then what did they do? Why did they fire you? I mean, what was their story?
Well, I think we'll have to call them about what their story is. But look, it's not a complicated thing. Right? First of all, I didn't need a job when I went to Palm. I've just told you what I do, and I've been doing that since 2010. I've been running my own business since 2010, and I was quite happy with that. So radio and television and writing that you see is a hobby for me.
Okay.
Right? So give them
it's not your main occupation.
No, not at all. So a lot of people thought it is because it's every day 4 hours. They think this is a full-time job.
Right.
So that's why, ironically, after I left there, my phone started ringing. So come and help us because you don't have a job anymore. Yeah. I said, no, it's not a job. It was a passion. Mm-hmm. Give him a call, calls me to say, we are ready for your show. That's all he said to me. I had not spoken for the guy for 3 years after a business fallout. And then he calls me and say, we are ready for your show. We are tired of being nice. So I said, whatever. You know, I went to Ethiopia. I was on my way to Ethiopia when he called me. I came back and I said to him, yes. No argument, nothing. And 3 years later, that show was obviously the biggest show on that station.
Right.
Probably the biggest show at night because people thought the right of the night and all radio stations at night, they switch off. We switched on at 8 o'clock, right? But here was the thing that I want to say. Kevin McCurry never told me what to do on my show. On one or two occasions where he complained about, you know, you had this guest and all. I just told him to go away. And then, you know, he generally did not interfere until I had to say to him, please stop beating up your wife on air.
Ooh.
Okay?
And that's when it got ugly.
I mean, it's obvious. You understand? All the other rubbish they are saying about why I was fired, that you know, because I worked for Faith Mutambi sometime in 2012, it's all rubbish. The fact of the matter is, when this guy beat up his wife, and I hope he has stopped, because at the time that he did this, I thought he had stopped, because I had to talk to him in 2008 when he beat up his wife and said, but stop beating up your wife. He didn't talk to him for a few years. So when I came back on air, I thought that he had stopped this nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously when I spoke there, I spoke with the authority, because I know that the rubbish that, oh, now he's the wife who beat him up, was all nonsense. In fact, a common friend of us called me and said, no, don't exaggerate this thing. In fact, this time it's the wife who's the basher. I said, did he tell you he's been beating up the wife for years? So after I did that, he never spoke to me. Remember, imagine if I wait here and then, you know, you go up and down here for 3 months and you don't talk.
I just ignored
him. So I knew that, you know, at the end of it, you know, on the morning that he was taken to the police station, a friend of mine called me and says, your friend has now been arrested for beating up his wife. I said to this guy, it's a friend of mine, I said, oh my God, it's my last day at power. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, if they stop me talking about it, I'm going to quit. If they allow me to talk about it, they're going to fire me over what I'm going to say.
So screwed.
Either way, I'm out. So now one day, 3 months down the line now, I speak about Phumla Williams' testimony in the state of capture. And I say to a couple of people, hey, this is terrible and so on. Then Chris Vick, in his wisdom, then says, yeah, but you worked for Mutambi. I said, so what has got to do with anything? Did I say to Mutambi must be horrible to Phumla Williams? No. You know, and all I said was that for whatever I may have aided in that I was now the pseudo advisor, and I'll tell you why I said the pseudo advisor to Mutambi, who was heading up a communication task team that was meant to advise her on how to run government communication properly.
Mm-hmm.
Work I'm proud of, work which is gathering dust in government. A report that she never even published, right? Because we are there as that task team, she had the audacity or even the opportunity to ignore Phumla Williams. Because she says, oh, I've got these bright people around me who are going to tell me what to do. This one I don't need. Right? And I'm saying that aided her to ill-treat Phumla. That's all I said. Now I get someone by Bob Mabane, who had no idea what she was saying, because obviously he was sent by Given to tell
Bob
me.
Bob was,
go.
He was program director?
No, he's the station manager.
Station manager.
And a breakfast host at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Go figure. Anyway, so the guy called me, mumbled something and said, I'm going to bench you. I don't know what I'm going to bench you now. And then I'll come back to you. And I just got a letter after 2 weeks to say you are fired. No hearing, no chance to defend myself, nothing.
So did you sued them?
I'm suing them. Do you think I'm going to let them get away? Not again. Given has gotten away too much.
Okay.
This time.
Is that still ongoing?
That's ongoing. He thinks it's over. It's ongoing. That my advocates are not relaxed.
Are you not worried that by talking about it, you're jeopardizing what could happen?
No, because the story is a straightforward thing.
Okay.
Yeah. There was no hearing. What else do you need? There was no hearing. There was no following of the contract about what needs to happen when you want to dismiss somebody. Sometimes things don't work out. I could come here. We could be nice to each other. And then after a few months, you think, hey, this guy's too much. Then you come and talk to me and say, listen, let's part ways. That's how decent, you know, business people should work. If you have a contract with somebody, they have outlived their usefulness, talk to them and say, chap is not working. I've done that with many, many people in my life. Since I started running business, my first business that I launched was in 1996, actually.
Hmm.
Right? And I know that within the first 2 years, I had to fire my CEO.
You must have been like 7, because you're looking young. So how old were you in 1996?
I'm actually 46. I was 20 something, but I started my first business then, and I know that sometimes you hire people and you sit across from them, you recruit them nicely over a cup of coffee and say, please come and work for me, because that's how you recruit good talent, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in the same vein, when the person is stuffing up, you call them and say, chief, it's not working. What are we gonna do? But often they're the ones who tell you, oh, let me go because I'm not fulfilling anymore. And that's all you need to do. You don't need to be nefarious and use people. I mean, Bob Mabena has absolutely no clue why he's fired me as we speak now.
So you think he was...
And I want to sue their pens
just,
off.
He was just doing what he was told to do.
Yeah. No, but this time, they're not going to get away with it.
Do you think that they're afraid? Do you think
No, they're not afraid. They told me an arrogant letter from their lawyer saying, do your best.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, it's on.
It's on. It's no problem. My lawyer says, relax. We have 3 years to sue
them. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people who would say, you know, why make enemies? Why make waves? Just move on. You've already got your own business.
Give me some my enemy. Given I have been friends for years. I mean, the guy was an MC at my wedding.
Do you think he would call you?
I was MC at his wedding.
Do you think he'd call you a friend now?
I don't care.
Do like
it. You know, on the day that he was in this mess, I rang him to say, before my show, you know, it's always fair to hear the other side. I rang him to say, hey, Chief, so tell me what happened, you know. And he said to me, are you calling me as a friend or as a broadcaster? And I said, why, take your pick. Why should I make a distinction? I'm just calling for you to tell me what the hell happened, you know. So it's an arrogant chap who I think has gotten away with too much. And I've not talked about this for a good reason, as you're saying, you know, they'll be sued. But the story is consistent, it's quite clear. And but fortunately, I'm very busy with many things. And actually, I was thinking, my God, if I wasn't off air for the last 3 months, how would I have completed my PhD? You know, because it was really in a bad shape. And I only submitted last week. And I'm hoping
What's this PhD in?
So my PhD is in media studies, and I'm looking at the relationship between government and the media over the last 24 years. Mm. I'm focusing on how Mandela related to the media, how Zuma related to the media, how Mbeki related to the media, making some comparisons and then saying in my final chapter, these are the recommendations of how government and the media can bridge the obviously gasping gap between them in order to benefit citizens.
Well, maybe government will pay attention, because I don't know if there's going to be an SABC very much longer. I mean, it's just a disaster. Yeah. Unmitigated disaster.
I'm not holding my breath. I mean, the reality is South Africa is only a small market in a big, big pool. You know, so I'll be going abroad. You know, in various countries, talking to various heads of states to see whether some of those recommendations
I'm saying for them. I mean, they're staring down the barrel of a gun at the moment at the SABC. They can't pay anybody. It's a disaster.
No, there'll be an SABC. I mean, there's no way that a government will let the SABC collapse. You must remember, SABC is at the end of the day, is a contest. It's a contested terrain. You understand? So I'm not surprised the Minister of Communication, you know, entered there with like a bull in a china shop.
Yeah, she said they can't fire anyone
in 2 minutes, and said you can't do this. And they've put a business person with who has a lot of clue of what to do. Like a person like Bongo Musa Makatini, I've got lots of respect for the guy. But in South Africa, when you are too independent, you are going to be in deep shit soon.
So let's just talk about Faith Mutambi, because you did work with her. I mean, this is one of the least impressive people I've ever seen occupy any office in my life. I don't know that I'd hire her to direct ox wagons to park. I mean, is she an impressive person? Have I misread her? Is there something about Faith that I've completely missed? Because my God, I have never, ever seen a single thing come out of her mouth that made me think that she had a brain behind her eyes. Am I wrong?
Look, let me tell you something. So, myself and the late Ronnie Mamweba.
I remember Ronnie.
We're shortlisted to be the CEO of GCIS.
Mm.
And the process was about to get to a head where there were going to be interviews when an election came. And Faith Mutambi was appointed Minister of Communications. I'd never heard of the name. I said, oh my God, there goes my job. Hmm. Who's this Faith Mutambi now? You know? 2 weeks from there, I get a call from Faith Mutambi. Can I please meet you?
Mm-hmm.
We tried to meet a couple of times. It doesn't work. And then one day she just said, no, look, I'm in Polokwane, just come through. Just a long holiday weekend. Of the 16th of June, I think, in one of those years, just when the elections were over. And then I drove through, you know, to Polokwane to meet her. And then, you know, she said, look, we need help. And so I was saying, is this a shortcut to my interview? What is this? You know, we need help. We need an advisor. And we need the DG who can pull these things together. Remember, they now lumped everything, SABC, Brand South Africa, ICASA, you know, MDDA, all in one. And they needed to see how to figure this out. So that's how I got to meet Faith Mutambi. I never met her in my life. I was a new Minister of Communications. I'm in business in communication. At that point, I was a consultant for Brand South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easy for her to then get Brand South Africa to basically continue my consultancy and then be at of service to her, because that.
But you must have had your work cut out for you.
Because, no, absolutely. So
because she at least acknowledged she needed help, but I think she was underestimating the amount of help she needed.
Let me tell you a story that hasn't been told. So now she has in her mind that look, I'm gonna make this guy the DG. Obviously, that's a long process that must still go through interviews. So in the meantime, she can, you know, consult. He can consult for me. So what I did was to say, hey, this is a mountain to climb.
What does that mean with Faith Mutambi? Does it mean like you put your left foot into your left shoe and your right foot into your right shoe, and this is how you do the laces? I mean,
just
Jesus.
Just quickly to tell you. So what I said to her is, look, Minister, let's get the top brains of communications in this country together, and they will advise on how to run this mammoth thing, because by myself, I wouldn't try, right? So we put together a big group, almost a conference of top communicators and marketers in this country. The likes of the Chris Vicks of this world,
You rate him?
Chris Vick, very highly. I rate him very highly. You know, I mean, he has his own little moments of madness, but, you know, the reality is you can only count in one hand some of the top spin doctors in this country, the likes of Sipong Gwema, Rems Mabote, Makosininko. So, you know, in that pool of people, okay, who you can bring and say, but also a big, big ego at the same time. So you had to contend with that. And one of his big gripes is that I was getting paid to put all that together. I was only getting paid because I had to hire six people who had to be a secretariat of this massive thing that was going to go on for a year. Yep. And he was getting zero, and he didn't understand.
Did any of these people spend 5 minutes with Faith and decide they wanted to blow their brains out, or did some of them stay?
No, all of them stayed. Only Chris left.
Okay.
Yeah, all of them stayed.
Is that just because they were being paid? Because my God, yeah,
nobody was being paid.
Nothing good happened under Faith Mutambi. I'm terribly sorry, JJ, but you can't spin your way out of that. That was a complete fuck up.
Yeah. So
right.
So
I mean, it was like Faith.
Look,
was
Faith Mutambi was a stuff up.
She was a disaster, and everything in her department was a disaster. The place seems to have been.
All she had to do was to take advice of those people he gathered.
So she didn't even listen to the advice.
We never even got the chance to present that report to her. It's gathering dust on her. I took my own initiative to send it to all her predecessors after that, to say, "Yo, look, you don't need to anything complicated. You don't waste any more money on commissions. Here are 12 subcommittee reports of what you need to do, from anything from broadcasting to digital migration to anything on PR of government and all of that." And I'm still thinking, I'm hoping that against hope, that someone finds is going to actually take that report, read it, and implement it, because government communication is in a stuff up. How do you explain 6 years of not having a CEO of GCIS? Six years.
Well, it's not surprising, because what did they have to communicate? They only had bad news. All of it was reactive.
But that's when they needed.
There's nothing proactive.
That's when they needed to communicate with the public, because believe me, Cliff, there's lots of good things that are happening somewhere in those 35 government departments. There are a lot of stuff.
I think you'd be hard-pressed. I really do.
But somebody must find it and communicate it and package it properly.
You might find a story about someone's cousin who benefited from a deal who maybe put a tap in a township, but that's about it. You'd be hard-pressed otherwise. Even SARS, which used to be this really well-run department, was completely obliterated in terms of its efficacy. It just seems to me that it would have been the hardest job if you had been made DG. You would have hated it. You would have been the one to blow your brains out, and we need you.
You know,
I'm very
glad you didn't get that job. Greta Mantashe said to me, "We didn't want you to go there because you're going to be frustrated." He told me, because what happened was that when Mutambi said they wanted to make me DG, Greta Mantashe and a few others who I won't mention now went to the president and said, "Please don't subject us to this guy."
Oh, really? Because they were afraid that you would grill them.
Absolutely.
You'd need to know
one minister who I won't mention now, but it's in my next book, said to the president, "This guy's not corrupt enough. You're going to give us trouble. There's this big digital migration thing and all the set-top box things of millions. Don't subject us to this guy."
Because you're going to ask questions that make them uncomfortable.
I was puzzled. I mean, I'm puzzled, but also pleased that somebody out there thinks this guy's not corrupt enough.
For us to
use him to do what we need to do.
It seems that like that was what they were looking for, really. I mean, it wasn't loyalty. We always used to think that people like Faith Mutambi were loyal to Jacobs, but they weren't. They were corruptible. So what you see now with Bosasa, I mean, what's your take on this? Because you don't have a radio show, so tell us, if you had a radio show now, what would you should you be saying on it about this thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Because everybody's shocked by how far it goes, how deep it goes. Who even knew Gavin Watson existed?
Let me tell you something simple. Mm-hmm. This is a tip of the iceberg.
Really?
What you're seeing in Busasa is a tip of the iceberg. Jesus. Because unfortunately, right, greasing of hands has become a way of doing business in South Africa, both in the private and mostly in the public sector.
Do you think in the media world there's a lot of that too in this country?
Why would it be different? The media, how many journalists do we have or media people? Maybe 3,000, 4,000.
So you reckon you could pay off some of those?
Absolutely.
You reckon governments
You know why? Because a lot of journalists have, first of all, are underpaid.
Yeah, they're paid rubbish.
Secondly, unfortunately, journalists are forced to have a second income stream.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good number of journalists who are into public relations, into spin doctoring and so on at night, while at day they are journalists. That's why I was clear. I went on radio and said, I'm not a journalist. Take your pick.
Uh-huh.
You know, do your best. I don't care. I don't. They said, no, you must be objective. No, I don't. Why should I be objective? I'm telling you my view. You tell me your view. As long as I give you a chance to say what you say. Right?
So communications, not journalism.
Absolutely. So, right. So all I'm saying is because of that kind of dichotomy, it's possible that a Pinky Kwabani, who's now been caught in this thing, and I've been listening to an interview. She's denying. She's saying, no. You know, maybe people can. And I know for sure that Pinky had, you know, had rough times and had to do work as a PR person.
It was either that or find a blesser.
You know, and then she's not like that. I mean, I know that for sure. So, I'm not saying that she was paid or not paid about us. I'm just giving that as an example that says sometimes there's a blur. And that's why sometimes the government make a mistake of thinking if they want a spokesperson, they must go and recruit a journalist. Some of the journalists are the worst at PR. Because they are used to writing stories about people and being sensational. Suddenly they must spin that Jacob Zuma is such a good guy. Right?
Yeah.
You know,
you think we're going to find out more. There's going to be a lot more revelation.
It's a tip of the iceberg. Busasa was only that which was found out. Those that who was caught. But many companies, and I realized this when I got into business and I hired a team of business development of people to go out and find business. And they say, my God, all these people are looking for a bribe, man. They say, we can give you the $2 million, but what's in it for me? By the way, it's one of one of the ministers said when a friend of mine went to lobby, he had to say, let's make JJ the CEO of GCI. He says, what's in it for us?
Oh, really?
Right, that is the heart of the problem. What is he gonna do for us?
These politicians. Right?
So Busasa, believe me, Busasa is in bloody good company. A lot of companies actually have a budget for bribing. They call it commissions. They call it with many other names, but they encourage their business people who are going there to find business to say, listen, we're gonna give you a R1 million bonus if you get this thing for us. Indirectly saying to them, whoever you can convince, you got something to play with.
Right, here's your pot of bribe money.
Yeah, Busasa has just perfected the art. Yeah, they're dealing with cash and what have you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But many other businesses don't do it so brazenly. You know, Busasa and Gupta are in the same WhatsApp group. Their biggest problem is to be brazen. Nobody is surprised that they're doing it. They're just saying, but how can they just do it a bit subtly, man? How do you buy a Louis Vuitton bag with 300,000 in it and give it to somebody and you think nobody's going to find out? It's rubbish. But this is unfortunately what is happening. The corruption in business is shocking. Of course, the public sector one is the one that often gets, because these people don't know the thing about hiding anything and PR and what. Whereas the business people are more sophisticated.
Yeah, so the public sector people are just amateurish.
So CEO of a big listed company is not going to go and count money
in a pallet and put it into a Louis Vuitton.
You don't do that, but they will get an executive who's overpaid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who then is the one who's... So the CEO has a deniability. Mm-hmm. So they paid me as a business development person a bonus of $2 million, which I don't need. And if I don't bring the bacon home, they say, but what else do you need? You're getting paid so much bonus. You understand? So that you can take from your bonus and bribe somebody. This is how that's why the tenders are such a farce. Because people sit there, they have already chosen who's going to get the tender because they have a back room agreement with that person that when you get that R2 million tender, we want our 10%, and you must bring it in cash because we don't want trouble in our bank accounts.
Fika.
Fika, forget Fika. People withdraw cash all the time. They go there and call it wages. Why are you withdrawing 300,000? No, it's for wages of my work. Oh, okay. They don't have accounts? No. These days we use e-wallet to pay people. It's mad what's happening. Bosasa, it's a, nobody, do you see any outrage? Do you see any? There's no outrage. People know this is what's happening. They're saying, hey, man, this. Do you know, I can tell you something. This guy, Agrizi.
Yeah.
On day two, the people involved in this corruption wanted to eliminate him before 10 o'clock.
I heard so. I heard they wanted to kill him.
No joke. They wanted to kill. No. It was not untrue. I know it for a fact. They wanted to eliminate him before 10 o'clock. I said, even if you eliminate him while he's still on the stand. Because they knew he's only on the stand for 2 weeks. And by the time he's finished, the government will be on its knees.
And they are, right? I mean, this is the most.
No, they wanted to kill him before 10 o'clock.
No one in Davos was talking about investment. They all talking about Bosasa. It's amazing.
It's only a sample of what's going on.
So you say that the tentacles go deep. I mean, this is fascinating to me. Do you think there's anyone in government who's honorable?
No, of course. Come on. I mean, how many people are in government? I mean, there are 400 MPs. Okay, they're not in government.
There's got to be some good people.
Absolutely. Say what you like. I mean, a person like Motsoaledi, I like. I think that he's tried to do a good job.
Right.
He's got a mountain to climb. You know, a person like Ayanda Dlodlo. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's one of the best stars of the government. I mean, you know, there are a couple of others who are quietly doing a good job. I like somebody like Butima Namel, you know. I know he's in bad company, somebody like Blade, you know, in his communist party. You know, now I heard you are ranting about socialism this morning. I don't want to provoke you. But there are some communist people who are not bad, you know. And Rob Davis, I think that guy's trying a good job. I mean, I don't know why the white person was made to be in charge of BEE, but that's for another day.
But someone like him, now he needs a spin doctor and he needs a fashion advisor. Jesus, he looks like a mess, Rob Davies. Davies looks like his mom dresses.
No, he must just shave.
He's dirty and scruffy.
No, he's not dirty, man.
He's dirty.
No, but he must just shave. Man. I mean, if he shaves, the rest of the body will look better. You know? And they must shift him to another portfolio. I think you really need a black person to lead black economic empowerment.
But let's talk BEE for a second. For the same reasons that the tender thing is a farce, BEE has been a farce. It's made a handful of people in this country extremely rich.
Implementation of BEE has been a stuff up.
Yeah, but this is always the problem. But the
policy itself. There's no alternative to that policy. You cannot continue on a straight line as if it's not 1994 didn't happen.
But what we've done is more damage to black business than help it. Because what people see now when they hear someone has been in a BEE deal, they go, it's someone who's politically connected. They don't value them on their merits. There are plenty of talented, brilliant black business people in this country who will never be taken seriously because they're part of a BEE deal. And people go, if it's a BEE deal, it must be political. It was given a bad name.
You would remember a few years ago, actually BEE just meant get a black person, give them 25% shares. And they can sit at home.
Fronting.
They can come when you declare your dividends.
Right.
Right. And I think that slowly that has been removed to say you got to look at an array of things. You got to look at who runs that business. You got to look at who is hired in that business. You got to look at how do you procure in that business. And all of those elements must integrate South Africa. It can actually be one of the best social cohesion tools you can find. Because you can't do social cohesion by saying, let's just be friends and I'm starving and you are busy, you know, driving a Maserati for your daughter and you think, I must just come and reconcile with you. Rather, let's look at what are the economics of bringing South Africans together to work together. And all those elements in BEE are there. They're just not implemented. I mean, you remember like a couple of years ago, there was something called the Employment Equity Commission, led by somebody called Jimmy Manye at that point.
Mm.
So every year, companies were forced to report, how far are you on your employment equity?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And even with that monitoring, right, in 2009, the report that was issued there after 20 years of democracy was that you still had 60% of promotions being to white people, 60% of new appointments being to white people. In other words, white people gain more from affirmative action than black people.
Which is just perverse.
There was some kind of monitoring going. With BEE, 2 years ago, they appointed what is called a BEE commission.
Nothing's happened.
No, the first CEO was an acting CEO. Just go figure.
Yeah, well,
the first person they appointed, say, head up this.
About all these actors, there's a lot of acting people in government.
It's Hollywood.
It is. But let's talk about our friend Jimmy Money, because you're in media, I'm in media. We both watched him. He said things about you. He said things about me. He said things about everybody, because Jimmy can't shut his mouth. But he's also spoken about, and I think quite patronizingly, he's spoken about black businesses as if he's got credibility there. And I think a guy like him has probably done more to provoke negative reactions inside the black business community than almost anyone else. He was appointed himself, nobody really knows, the black management. What was his
No, he was elected.
Was he elected?
Yeah.
Who the fuck elected him? So let's just look at Jimmy, because he's been such a success, all right? When he was coddled, when he was the head of GCIS.
Yeah.
And he was in a safe government job where you can actually screw up as much
up
as possible.
Bloody thing.
You can screw up as much as possible. No one's going to hold you to account. This is the amazing thing about having a government post. You'd think you'd be more responsible because you're elected.
I don't know who
appointed
who,
by government.
Yeah, I don't know what Bright Spark thought Jimmy Mine could run a government communication.
Who was the communications minister? Was it Eunice?
I think it was Chabani. I think he was appointed by Chabani.
Or was it even before that?
Yeah.
Ivy Matsepe Kasaburi.
Yeah, I don't know who was the communication minister when he was, but he was appointed by Chabani, the late Chabani, and that was a worst mistake. But let's take a pause. Mm-hmm. Separate Jimmy from Uzanele a little bit.
Okay. Jimmy Tell me Mani about the difference, because it's almost like a split personality.
Jimmy Mani was one of the foremost activist when it comes to transformation of society. That's why he was made the head of the employment equity.
Right.
Right. And he did a good job of it. I worked for a corporate during his time where I was supposed to help them figure out how they're going to transform themselves. And I invited Jimmy to speak to them and frighten them into change. Right. Because he was when he was BMF president, he was the foremost campaigner for change, for transformation. And then somebody just decided, no, this guy must be a spin doctor, and messed up the reputation that he had started to build under BMF. That's why I'm saying separate from Uzanele.
Do you think he was twisted and perverted by that process, or do you think he was always this guy and he was just riding the train for as long as he could?
No, I don't think he was always that guy. That's why I'm saying separate Jimmy from the Jimmy I remember was a proper activist saying all the right things about how we should implement BEE and employment.
But you don't think he was just one of those people who was looking for the best paycheck he could find for himself?
No.
Because, I mean, he would take...
I don't think he's too hungry.
What happened there with the Guptas and with New Age and with ANN7? Was that just a farce? Because it looked to me like it was the most... It was the most badly put together play I've ever seen on a stage.
Absolutely. Just 2 days ago, I was talking to a friend about, but why did Jimmy actually rebrand the damn thing? I'm sure he spent money rebranding ANN7 to Afro World View.
Because he rebranded himself and that worked out so well.
But why would you do that if you didn't have a backroom deal? Because everything pointed to the fact that he must have gone to MultiChoice and said, listen, guys, I know that this thing started badly, but now it's mine. Whatever vendor finance it is that suddenly he paid off in 3 months, you know. Please give me another chance. I'll just call myself something else. I thought that's what the case. But it looks like he did it as some kind of pressure to MultiChoice to keep him on. But they wanted him so out that before the new channel is on, they had to switch him off. I mean, he could have still been running because the new channel is not ready to go on air.
Also, he doesn't have any money and he's a bullshitter. And like people saw that. Who's going to give a bullshitter money?
Is this type of language allowed on air?
Yeah, it's allowed.
Oh, all right. So I don't have a show here. Anyway, listen.
You want a show? You can have a show. I'm just not going to be sued for the things you say. I want to point out in this interview that the views of JJ Tabane are not those of Cliff Central or its employees.
I wrote a note to somebody who works for you 3 years ago before I went to power, and I said, yes, I would like to, you know, explore. And I got a report that says, no, I'm not hired. I said, who's looking for a job?
You're lying. You didn't email. I would have replied to you.
Can I forward you that email?
Please send
it. I'm going to find it.
I want to know.
What are you going to do when you find it's true?
Then I'll have to apologize to you on air.
All right. Okay, what I want us to agree is that I'm going to take over one of your shows.
Sure,
for
you
one
can.
Day.
All right.
Okay?
No
good.
Problem.
I'm going to forward you that email. Please remind me.
All right.
No, this was very polite. We're not hiring now, so I'm so sorry to hear you.
Did you send it in
I did. I sent you a note.
No, but in your own name.
In my own name.
No way.
No, the person probably, maybe it was just somebody who was filtering the mail.
Yeah.
But I did receive something like that. I promise you.
You're a well-known man. There's no way they would have replied.
All right, if you see it, I'm coming to host your show next week. How long is your show? 3 hours. I'm coming.
3 hours.
And you must keep your word, eh?
You can come anytime you want. This is an open door for you. I mean, my God, our ratings will go sky high.
No, listen, I'm coming after you because I'm establishing a whole online radio station soon.
So, who do you rate in media in this country? I'd be interested.
In terms of what, journalism or
journalism, business,
okay,
media understanding.
Let's start with media. I mean, I rate Eusebius Makaiza very high.
Do you?
Yeah, I think it likes too much to talk about this sexuality and so on, which sometimes is a turn off because nobody cares, but. But otherwise, I think he's a good broadcaster, and he does the F person. He likes to argue a lot, which sometimes can be a bit irritating. But I think I rate him high in terms of talk show hosts. I think Joanne Joseph is quite sharp, and Kolani Gwan.
Really, she doesn't put you in a coma. I mean, I by mistake, because I usually plug my phone straight in when I get into the car, and Joanne Joseph came on the other day. I mean, God bless her. She's a lovely, lovely person. I've met her a few times. She really is. She's sweet. She's very professional. Yeah. I won't take anything away from her, but no sense of humor. Like, I don't think she knows how to laugh.
No. You don't listen to that show regularly. I'm sorry.
Really?
They laugh all the time. They've got a good team there that's always
about
making jokes.
About funny stuff or stupid stuff?
No, no, no. Really?
Well,
I mean, fun is too busy. This is a bit
subjective.
We must relax sometimes. Right. So some stupid stuff is allowed. Right. Jeremy Max, I think, is a brilliant chap.
Where is he these days? What channels?
Do you watch anything else? I mean, he's...
What's he on?
He's on ENCA. You know?
Okay.
By the way, talk about ENCA. Very good guys there. I mean, a chap like...
is Jeremy Mags on ENCA?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, right. He runs something called Mags on Media. He has done 500 episodes.
Do you frankly, like, while we're on ENCA, do you like Vuyo Mbogo?
Yeah, Vuyo is fine. I think he's obviously in his 50s. He's trying to just be relaxed. And sometimes my wife and I complain that his links are too dry. So there will be a very, very funny story that's in an insert. And then Vuyo will just say, next, how's the weather? As if nobody has said anything. So that's the only, but he said, look, chap, you know, I don't have time I stick to the script and that's it. But he's a good guy. I think he has had a very well-rounded career, starting as a writer for Business Day, and then was fired from SABC because of the Guptas by Mutambi.
He was one of the SABC 8.
Yes, yes. Mutambi just sat in her bedroom and phoned Claudia and said, can you get that guy off air? Because
Did you ever work with Claudia?
Yes, I did, actually.
What do you make of him? Tell me about him.
He's a decisive guy. He just sometimes it's a fucked up decisions. Oh, sorry. just say sorry. Yeah. He's a very decisive fellow.
He can make a decision, but
he can make a decision. That's for sure. Because remember, in the PR space, I needed the SABC. So there was a point where I was being given a runaround by some of the low level managers. Then I decided to write to him and say, listen, chap, I have these government departments. I need them to be on radio on these slots and what and what. And he's among those people to come and meet with me. And I was shocked that in a day, I got a meeting that I've been asking for over 3 months. You understand? So there was something good.
So at least he made a decision.
At least he made it. That's why I'm saying that he's a decisive guy, let alone these decisions themselves. So I think those are the people. On SABC, I think Steven Grotes is great. Yeah. I see he seems to have replaced Bongani Bingwa on the night show. But I don't know, maybe Bongani is still on leave or something. But he's a good chap. Bongani Bingwa himself is not bad, both on TV. And I just don't know how you do a three-hour show in the morning and a three-hour show at night. And then still have quality. I don't know. Maybe he exercises. So he's still fresh in the morning. Because I used to battle. I mean, I had a four-hour show in the evening. During this time of the day, I would have to be sleeping.
Yeah,
so that I could be fresh.
Sure, of course.
So the guy wakes up at 4, does a morning show. But and then at 6 p.m. does an evening show of 3
isn't
hours.
Isn't this just because we've run out of talent?
We haven't run out of talent. No. How can you say such a thing? You sound like your secretary wrote to me to say, you know, we are not hiring.
No jobs at the moment.
You know, because you can discover people. I mean, whatever stuffed up given may be now, he found me and he took a chance of somebody who was not the radio guy, who's only been on Ubuntu Radio. You know Ubuntu Radio?
That was the government's one.
No, it's still there.
It's still there.
Yeah,
Ubuntu Radio. It's an online government thing.
Yeah, I had a 1 hour show there for a few years.
Did you?
Yeah. I was just interview people in my studio because I own a studio. And then just send it to them by Dropbox.
Did you have any listeners there on that show?
Well, my fans text me, you know, like my wife and other people around me to say, you are very good. So, you know, but you see now what happened. Sometimes that practice helps because then I had a good show for the last 3 years.
What about, let's just talk through some of the people who you feel are in a position to fix things. Because there's so much wrong at the moment. And people like you and I get criticized sometimes for moaning about government, pointing out their inadequacies.
I'm chair critics,
So you said earlier there are good people, and you mentioned some of those ministers.
Yeah.
And I do agree about Ayanda Dlotlo and Aaron Motsoaledi. I mean, I think their intentions are good.
Absolutely.
And they seem to me to be principled people, and they're up against a very, very tough system. I mean, we know Aaron Motsoaledi was talking about, for example, the Northwest, how he just couldn't get clinics opened, and there was just huge opposition to him because he's not into corruption. And all the rest of them clearly were. So who do we need to look to save us? The elections are coming up this year. It's an important year politically.
Yeah.
We've got all these politicians vying for our attention. I look at the three main parties, and I'm just very, very unhappy with my options. I really don't like any of them. There's no saving quality or characteristic in any of them.
And Ipsos has already told you the ANC is going to win. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's...
So you
that's
can lower expectations about any dramatic change. The EFF is 6%. At most, they'll be 14%.
That's
they can
what they
double.
Said this morning, right?
Yeah. You know, but if they think they're going to get to 50, they must
out
be on some cannabis.
The DA are useless. Right? Because Musi Maimane has got about as much credibility as a Hollywood actor. And many people would say he's not even a good one of those.
Yeah.
And the DA, who knows what they stand for anymore? Yeah. Who knows what they care about?
I fortunately have met Musi a couple of times off air and talked to him.
Very personable guy.
I think he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a nice human being.
In a wrong place.
But he's not a leader.
Right? He's in a wrong place. He tries. But, you know, the reality is, and I'll tell you this frankly, that white people who have been in charge of the DA since its inception, quote unquote, want their DA back. That's the sentiment. Full stop. Okay? So Musi can be as wonderful a leader as he likes. The reality is the white caucus is strong in the DA and it's not going anywhere. All right? But let me tell you something.
Who's this James self? Because we hear about him
no,
all the...
No, that's the leader of the DA. That's the leader.
That's what people are saying.
Okay? And that's wrong because if you have elected somebody, you need to defer to that person or get out and go and form your own party.
Yeah.
You know?
This guy's like in the shadows... Barking
there
the
are good people in the EFF.
Are there?
In the ANC. Yes.
Who?
In the ANC.
Do you want to name them? It'll only take us
Advocate Dali is not bad.
I like him.
Advocate Dali is head screwed on well. And he actually said to me, you know, you're too hard on Malema. My son is a youngster who's grown, who's not the same youngster who has in COSAS. Mm. He has grown in stature over the years and with some level of maturity here and there. He does lose a screw here and there. Mm-hmm. But frankly, you can't ignore Julius Malema.
No, right? you'd be an idiot to ignore
So
him.
I think there are good people in both these three parties. And maybe an ideal setup at some point, even if it's simply if it's just for one term, which is 5 years, so the ANC can go and sort itself out, right? Is that we need a coalition government where these people can watch each other because there's so much thieving in all the parties.
Yeah.
But I know they won't conspire to steal together. Because they are waiting for you to steal and say, hey, look at this thief. So next time, don't vote for him.
So what we need is
you need a coalition government at this rate. Because
where they're watching each other.
They must watch each other. Then
so
they'll stealing will be less. Right? Because if you steal in the presence of the DA and your EFF, they'll run to the media and say, look, I found him stealing. Don't neglect him next time. So I think that it's not going to happen in this coming election. Let's be clear. The ANC is going to your pattern won't change now. There isn't enough scandal and anything life-changing that would make the ANC lose power now. Right? But I agree with Kalma Motlanthe that at some point the ANC need to lose power. And maybe it must be a gradual thing. So where, for example, they lose Gauteng, and I'm sad to say that because Dave Makura is one of my favorite ANC leaders who I think is the future of the ANC. Mm. He's been wasted in Gauteng. He needs to go into the ANC, NEC level, almost a secretary of the ANC to clean up. I mean, the ANC has shot itself in the foot by appointing Ace Magashule.
Jesus.
I mean, the guy is a disaster. You understand? He's an absolute disaster. And that's why Zizi is at head office. The only reason Zizi is not in parliament or in a cabinet of Ramaphosa is to watch Ace every day. Literally, walk around the corridor and what is this guy up to? What is he planning?
He has to monitor him like a babysitter.
Zizi is baby. That's why as soon as Pulemabi, you know, was off the stage, Zizi was back as spokesperson, acting spokesperson, you know. And even before that happened, they appointed five other spokespersons: Jackson Mthembu, Zizi, and Lekwete, and whoever else. Because Ulemabe is ACES appointment. They are in the same WhatsApp group. Have you seen people who call a press conference, but the official expression is to say, "When are we getting out of here? You guys are irritating us."
Yes, you can't
do PR like that. You know, they have to learn from Zizi and Gwede. They were humorous. Almost welcoming to the press.
Almost.
Almost. But these ones are definitely hostile. You know, Pule, he can't even laugh with journalists.
But ACES, you're right. ACES facial expression is like, I hate
you. On my show, I used to call it ill at ease. I dedicated the whole show to just explain to people what the English phrase ill at ease means. And you don't need a long explanation. It's ACE and Pule. Ill at ease. They are sitting there trying to have a press conference to convince you about their message. But their body language is that of saying, you hostile, angry people, we don't like you.
What about Bantu Holomisa on the outside there?
He's a good chap. I mean, like, there's three seats in parliament. It's not going to make any difference. I like him. He's a good chap. You know, we often forget that he was a homeland leader. But he's one of the elders in parliament. It's like almost like your Buthelezi.
Shame. I was going to say, Mangosuthu Buthelezi. Yeah,
who's refusing to retire. I don't know.
Ninety years old.
I think someone must whisper that he'll still get a state funeral even if he retires now.
Shame. Is that all he wants?
I don't know why he's still in parliament. Why do you sit in parliament and argue with a Julius Malema who's half your age?
Half?
Or more?
A quarter?
I don't understand that. But going back to the coalition thing, I really think the ANC must lose Gauteng, and then DA must keep what is it?
Western Cape,
and then somebody else must maybe govern the Eastern Cape.
Northwest is the one that's up for grabs.
Yeah, I don't know whether, you know, the Northeast people are too so loyal, man. Despite all the potholes and what, they're still going to vote the ANC.
Supramahumapelos.
And also that they're not by the balls. Because, you know, it's how Africa has a big man syndrome. If you don't put forward a big man, to win elections is a tall order. You understand? Because people are not going to read your bloody manifesto. They want the charismatic leader. I mean, I was watching some of the videos of Malema talking in the campaign trail.
Well, this is how we ended up.
He's unmatched in the oratory space in South African politics.
Agreed.
Unmatched.
And this is also why we got stuck with Getlehlegis, because he was very charismatic.
Oh, gosh, man. I mean, that's what about
he was. But I mean, you've met him a couple of times. He's a very charming man.
You know, I met him, and he was speaking to me like we're friends from 20 years ago. Yeah. That guy's a charmer.
Grabs you on the shoulders.
But absolutely useless, okay? Absolutely useless. But don't undermine him. He's a strategist, right? But hey, he's destroyed.
Streetwise, man.
He's truly destroyed this country. And these bits and pieces of stories coming out of the Guptas, the Busas, show you only a fraction of what Zuma did to destroy this place.
I don't know how he had time to even pretend to be president with all these deals going on in the
No, I think he was president. He just wanted to make sure that he retires well.
Well, he may retire behind bars if all of this goes this way.
I hope so. You know, I really, truly, truly hope he goes to prison.
Would you visit him?
For what? Maybe to interview him? I've been trying to get an interview with him. And when I go back to television, which is soon, I want him to be one of my interviews, especially now that he's on Twitter. He looks like he likes the camera now, you know.
Yeah, he's in there.
Maybe he'll have an album out at that time. Then he'll be newsworthy again.
Publicity, yeah.
You know, then I wrote him in my book of letters. I had not intended to write to him. I wrote to 21 people. And then when I was just about to go to print, a friend of mine said, but Zuma appears in every single letter.
Why don't you write
to him? Why don't you write to him? I said, oh my God. And your book won't be credible without Zuma. I phoned the publisher and said, I need 10 days to write to Getlehlegis. And I wrote him a 5,000 letter. And there's a letter that got me summoned to Luthuli House by Jesse Duarte.
I also got summoned.
Serious? I'm sure you told him to fuck off. Did you go?
2010 by Zizi.
Did you go?
He was the presidential spokesperson at the
time. No, but did you go? Because Zizi was upset with Jesse that Jesse summoned me.
Oh.
You know, but I didn't mind. So I went there and Auntie Jessie, you know, her first open I was to say, I know that you think I'm stupid. I said, no, I don't think you're stupid.
Is that how she started the meeting?
Yeah, because a letter I wrote to her.
I know that you think I'm stupid.
Yeah, she said that. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? So I said, no, Jessie, you're not stupid. I just don't agree with you about Nkandla. Because I'd written her a letter to say, oh, you think there's nothing wrong with Nkandla? Then let's get Cyril to build an Nkandla in Venda. You know, so because I write my letters in a satirical fashion, she really took offense. and thought and said that I'm stupid.
So she's not, you don't think she's stupid?
No, she's not stupid.
But she definitely doesn't have a sense of humor either.
No, she's not stupid. She doesn't have a sense of humor. She got me fired from the SABC.
Yeah.
You know, because she didn't pitch on my show, and then I continued with the DA and EFF only. You know,
so she was bitter.
And she
about
got
it.
Me fired from that job.
Takes things very personally.
Anyway, she then said, "But why would you insult the head of state every day? And how can you?" I said, "Is your head of state above ridicule?"
Yeah.
She was puzzled, because the last sentence of my letter to Zuma was to say, "Please pass my greetings to Makumalo and all other wives in good standing." And the city press decided to make an extract of that letter, and that's all Jesse read, and summoned me to tell me where to get off. And then she said to me, and I've never spoken about this to anybody, you know, that there's nothing to lose now. So she says to me, "Why would you do this? Why would you write such a thing about the head of state?" And you know, and then she asked me, "So tell me, where do you stand with us?" What do you mean? I've been in the ANC movement since I was 14 years old. My first activism was at high school at 14. I was in SRCs, I was in SASCO, and then I left to go and form COPE, which is just another version of the ANC. That's why I'm back to the ANC. So what do you mean, where do you stand with us? Have you seen the letters I've written? Do you realize that I've written to every practical politician in this country? I mean, I have over 250 letters on Daily Maverick. I'm exhausted now. I've said everything I need to say. You know? And that's why people say, aren't you afraid they'll shoot you? They'll shoot me, but the letters won't be erased from the internet. So it's useless. But you know what the best part was? So after I explained to her, because she seems to have been fed by Jimmy Mani that I'm a bad person and I mustn't be listened to. And when she heard my history and what I've done in the movement from student activism to now, and the fact that, in fact, I used to be a ghostwriter for her, and without her knowledge, you know, and forced her to say things.
She had
like,
no idea. Huh?
You must introspect. She didn't know. She was shocked about it. She then said to me, "Keep writing." That's how we ended our meeting.
Change of tune. Well,
keep writing.
Well, I do think that your contribution is enormous. I love talking to you. I love listening to you. I'm very excited. You say you'll be back on TV soon.
Absolutely.
That's good news. The book, ladies and gentlemen, is called Let's Talk Frankly, Letters to Influential South Africans on the State of the Nation. And it is absolute must-reading stuff for anyone who wants to take their political analysis seriously. And as you say, it's satirical. Yeah. Some people must learn to take a joke.
Just laugh.
Yeah,
you know, but when politicians don't take satire seriously.
I do feel sorry for your wife and family, because you put them in constant harm's way. Oh man,
don't say that. My wife is a big encourager, but also a big critic. Sometimes she does tell me to shut up.
And the kids, do they ever tell you to shut up?
Not the kids. The kids don't tell me to shut up. But I've actually brought them to my radio show to talk to them and so on. But my wife did say, "But you know, you're a big mouth now. I mean, you should have just kept quiet. You'd probably still be on the air now. Can you shut up sometimes?" You know.
I think
I have said in my book, I'm not concerned about longevity. I'm not. I quoted Martin Luther King there. Not concerned about longevity. Something is wrong, I'll call it out. If I'm wrong, I'll go on and say I'm wrong, and that's it. You take it or leave it. Anybody who gives me a media platform understands that, and you know, despite what I've said about Given, he's giving me the free latitude to say whatever I wanted to say on air, and that's what made that show authentic. And of course, the only thing was that when I now told him where to get off, that's where I crossed the line. And but maybe it's a lesson for next time I'm in a radio show. I just avoid the owner, right? Unless the owner is me, which I will be.
Or email people like me, and then you get a very polite reply that we don't need.
I'm going to forward you that. If you think I'm joking, I'll be back here laughing at you for 3 hours next week. I will forward it to you.
JJ, we love hearing from you, man. And thank you for coming to spend some time with us.
It's a pleasure.
It's been worth the wait.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
It's so refreshing.
And I'll see you very, very soon to host your show.
Damn right. I'm looking forward to it.
Fantastic.
Onkopotse JJ Tabane. That's it. CliffCentral.com. We're out of here. It's 9 o'clock.
This is CliffCentral.com.